Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 435, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Don Jago from mytechgeeks.ca. Welcome to the show, Don.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
Good to have you. Why don't you get started and just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe where you're from, and basically how you got started in computer repair.
Sure. I got my first computer way back. I think it was in the late 1970s. It was like an old TRS-80. And that was back in the days where, you know, basically to play games, you had to get a magazine. I don't know if it was Byte Magazine or whatever. And you type in the games and all the code and eventually you'd get a game out of it. And if you had an error, you had to go back and find the error to fix it so you could play the game, right? So I've stayed in computers really since then, since I was a little kid. I managed tech programs in large call centers for Microsoft and for Hewlett Packard for quite a few years. And eventually during about five years ago or so, when the economy kind of went south a little bit, basically my job was outsourced. So I started this business.
Okay.
Very
cool. So you were actually, one of those people that was, by the economy, you were basically forced to do something that you probably were more passionate about, I would imagine, as far as being in your own business and, you know, being able to help other people. But why don't you tell us a little bit about how that worked out for you as starting out?
Sure. Yeah. So basically, I just started out part-time. I started using Google AdWords, and I found it really worked. It was kind of like a light switch. You know, you hit it, and within usually an hour or two, I got a phone call. Did flyers, those types of things. And really, within the first year, I was too busy just to do all the work myself. I had to hire some contractors, subcontractors just to help out. It worked out really well. It's amazing. I hear all the time, probably once a week or once every couple of weeks, that you're the best tech person I've ever dealt with, or it's the best service I've ever received. And I find it's just basically if you're there on time, maybe a couple of minutes early, you do what you say you're going to do, you do a really good job, go the extra mile, and people really appreciate it because a lot of the time they're just not used to receiving that level of service.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what I explain to my customers and, you know, people that are supposedly in competition. I say, you know what? My whole goal is to create a relationship with the customer. And if we don't have that chemistry between us, then we really don't need to work together. But if we do, I just want to take care of all their technology needs and I want them to feel comfortable enough to call me and to be able to do that. And so it really comes down to, you know, we're not big box stores. We're not just, and not to say that there's not good customer service at big box stores. I'm not saying that because those people there are good too, but they're kind of constrained by what the company tells them they can or cannot do. When you work for yourself, you can actually do things the way you think they should be done and really go that extra step and really take care of the customer.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're limited by tools and by time and all these policies. And absolutely. Like I've got referrals from Future Shop, from Best Buy and stuff where maybe it's going to cost too much to replace a screen or something like that. And they're like, hey, you know what? Just go call this person or this company and they'll fix you up, you know? So, absolutely.
I'm always amazed at that because I get the same things. I get people that people from Best Buy said, hey, you know, call this guy for a screen replacement. And, you know, I've done screen replacements that, you know, like you said, were just too expensive to do at a Best Buy. And so they're looking people up and saying, hey, check this person out over here. And, you know, probably just doing a Google search or whatever. But I always laugh. I'm like, really? Best Buy sent you?
Yeah. There was one store that I won't mention the name. It's not Best Buy, but another store where laptop was actually under warranty, but it was actually going to cost more. Like there was a fee that they had to pay, and it was actually going to cost more to pay the company than it was for me to replace the whole screen with a brand new screen and for me to still make a tidy profit on it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. But, you know, that's why we do what we do. And that's, you know, hopefully we can In today's day and age, I don't want to be the big corporate entity that basically doesn't have that, you know, that one-on-one with my customers.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's a small business or, you know, medium-sized business or whatever, I still want to have that one-on-one with the, you know, with the customer base just to, I don't know, just kind of make that relationship better. And, you know, again, just, you know, it's kind of creating that trust, right, between you and
absolutely.
The customer.
Yeah. Like sometimes we'll get a call for something minor. Maybe they get a virus on their computer. Maybe a company has a virus or something. And the next thing you know, you're managing everything for them, you know, like in a matter of weeks, just because you've built up that trust with them and you're giving them a better level of service than what they've been receiving before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's very cool. So, okay. So you got started in computer or in your business a couple years ago. And I laugh because, you know, talking about your backstory, you said, you know, you started off with the TRS-80s and I remember those. As a matter of fact, I think there is still one sitting up in my father-in-law's upstairs in his house.
it's not something.
You know, I've looked at it. I'm not even sure if it works anymore. But yeah, I started off myself with the TI-99 and same type of thing. Yep. You know, I can't remember the name of the magazines, but I remember sitting there writing basic code, you know, to code a little game or something like that. That's kind of cool.
It was awesome. I moved on to the VIC-20, the Commodore 64. I hit an old Packard Bell, you know, like 120 megahertz. You know,
wow.
With a 3D chipset, video chipset in it. And I thought it was amazing. And, you know, it was maybe 2 or 3 frames a second, but you could see 3D type of thing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, how much did that Packard Bell cost you back then?
$3,000.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing nowadays you can basically build a, you know, pretty decent gaming computer for, you know, probably a little less than $1,000.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's a lot more expensive here in Canada. It's about maybe 20-25% more, but still, yeah, it's still pretty affordable. Absolutely.
That's very cool. Okay. All right. So why don't you walk us through basically what types of things do you do in your business? You know, I know some people kind of have niches that they – or niches, I should say. I'm sorry. I'll use the Canadian vernacular. or so I've been told. But, you know, what types of things do you repair and are there things that you actually turn away and don't do?
Yeah, we repair most things. There's some things we won't touch anymore. Like I used to repair iPads and iPhones and stuff, and I laugh when I heard your story about taking them apart because they're just too small. And it just seems like it's not worth the time. I get so many calls. Like I probably literally get 4 or 5 calls a week to replace a screen on some sort of a tablet, but it's just not worth the time. And in my opinion, anyway, unless someone can get the process down quickly. Maybe have the parts in stock or something. But other than that, like we don't really do much work on phones or tablets unless someone's already an existing client. We don't want them to go elsewhere. But typically we don't work on mobile devices. Of course, we do laptops. We do basically everything. We do consultations. We'll do a lot of data recovery. We do a lot of Macs. So basically, any kind of a problem, like you need a hard drive replaced in an iMac or something, we do a lot of those. You know, SSD upgrades, you name it. We do a lot of websites and some hosting. Of course, virus removal. We do some work as far as maintenance plans, but most of the businesses we deal with, it's break fix type of thing.
Okay.
But we basically do everything except for mobile devices, like the iOS devices and smaller devices that are mobile.
Yeah, that almost seems like, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you have to almost concentrate on that for the major part of your business. It's like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do mobile devices, and this is what I'm going to get really good at. Because, you know, I've heard different people say, you know, like when you're pulling a screen off an iPad or whatever, that, you know, I'm looking at it and I go... I look at those situations and I go, if you get good, you might be able to get that thing all pulled off and basically all cleaned up with all the little shards of glass in maybe a half hour.
So yeah, I think so.
You know, now I've heard other people say, oh no, it's 10 minutes. And I'm like going, okay, whatever.
when I take those things apart, I have to do it very slowly. But I mean, again, I don't do it very often.
Sure.
It's very rare, you know. But I don't like anything I have to apply heat to get a screen off, that type of thing. Like that always makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, and I, you know, so I remember, well, you probably heard me talk about it, but the digitizer I had to replace on the laptop, which I'm kind of steering people away from those. You know, I bought the iFixit kit with the, you know, the bags of goo that you basically put in a microwave and, you know, lay on there and then you kind of pry it up with the little, you know, pick or whatever and just kind of pull it. But even then, it just, it depending on the type of glue too, you know, or the type of, you know, sticker, the double-sided sticky tape that's in there. Some of those are really, really tough and they just take time to sit there and pull up on them until they're ready to actually let go.
Yeah, not for me. Yeah. My hands are too big. It's just too clumsy to be getting at little tiny things like that. You know, too hard.
Now, do you do anything with backup or anything like that? Do you?
Yeah, we do. We partner with Backblaze.
Okay.
So we do backups with them. So, yeah, it's mostly for backups. It's mostly residential. We do some for businesses, but it's mostly residential stuff.
Gotcha. And you haven't gotten to managed services. Do you find that there's a need out there, or are you finding that people just mostly want, when their stuff breaks, they just want to fix at that time and they're happy?
I think there's a need there. Yeah. To be honest with you, if I had a little more time, I could actually go out and target businesses, which I've never done. I've actually got the businesses just naturally, like just I would go and do some work for maybe the, you know, residential customer, and it turns out that they own a business, and next thing you know, that business tells another business, another business, another business, and next thing you know, you're doing a lot of business support, you know, which is great because they don't mind paying the higher rates, right?
Right. Now, so that goes, that's a great question. Now, do you charge, like, you've charged flat fees, or do you charge hourly rates, or how do you do your business?
It's basically $70 an hour for most things. Okay. But for virus removal, there's flat rates, depending whether it's done locally or if it's just done through remote service.
Now, do you charge less or more depending on whether you do it remotely versus
if I'm on site, I have to charge hourly, you know, for some businesses, they have to have it done on site. So it's hourly. So that usually tends to be more, but I actually charge more, through remote service because I basically position it that it's same day service. It's very fast and same day. I don't like to say instant just in case you can't get to it right away.
Sure.
Whereas, for most other virus removals that we're bringing back to the shop, we usually get it back in 24 to 36 hours. We advertise 24 to 48, but usually we get it back the next day, unless you know, a computer's running really slow or something like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I thought the same thing when I started doing remote support. I'm like, I really should probably charge a little bit more because I'm able to do it quicker versus, you know, they're getting instantaneous service as far as I'm able to at least start on it and get things going, and they don't have to bring it anywhere. And it's kind of nice, you know, I charge a flat fee if they bring it to me. So,
right.
And then, yeah, same thing. I learned the hard way that when you're on site, you have to charge hourly. And the only other thing that I do is if I can get the computer to a point where I can basically remote in, and, you know, I might give them a little break that way and say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and go back to the shop, and which is my home, and finish it. And, you know, I'll let you know when it's done, type of thing. Instead of, because I really, regardless of whether I'm getting paid hourly, I really don't want to sit on site anywhere for 6 hours.
Me either. I really don't like it. And I do the exact same thing. Like if I can, I'll do the hard stuff there, just to make sure I'm going to be able to access it remotely. And then, you know, if they're okay with it, then I log in basically from away. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a time waster for you and the business just to be sitting there waiting for things to happen, you know.
When you're working on one thing, you know.
Right. Like, yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Yeah.
Now, what's your radius? I mean, do you go out pretty far from your and are you based out of your home?
Actually I am. I'm based out of a double car garage. Built a new home about 11 years ago, and it's a pretty good setup. I didn't know I was going to be doing this, but the garage, you know, right when you come to the door, there's a door to go into the garage, right? So I basically just gutted the whole garage. It's pretty big in here, has really high ceiling and stuff, and it looks professional when you come in.
Nice.
But I try not to get people to come here. I say by appointment only. Like,
sure.
You know, we're basically a mobile service, but some people do occasionally drop things off, and occasionally you just have some people show up at the door.
It's funny. I think as many years as I've been doing this, I've had one that's actually showed up like on a Saturday morning or something like that. But generally, I don't know what it is, but people, I've been in two different areas in Michigan, and the people just, they'll call and I'll say, what time do you want to, you know, what time do you want to drop it off? And they say, I'll drop it off at such and such a time. Great. You know, as long as it's during my, you know, business hours. But, I've heard other people say that, that they've had people just kind of show up to their doorstep. And I'm like, you know, I just wonder, it's got to be based on areas and just how comfortable people feel, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. And sometimes too, like a couple of them that have showed up were referrals from referrals type of thing. And they just heard about me, but didn't call first or anything, just kind of showed up. You know?
Gotcha.
Yeah. But I mean, feel bad for them too at the time, because a lot of the time I'm just not around, right? Like I'm at working, right?
So sure, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I would love, you know, now, do you have any pictures or anything of your shop where you're working out of?
I haven't taken any pictures. No, no, I could take some and send some to you, but,
yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Yeah, I'm always interested to see people's setups and.
I was interested in the Tech Nibble a while back there. They had, images of shops and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, because there's lots of great ideas. And I'm the same as you. I like sharing ideas. I don't really feel like I'm in competition with local people that are doing the same thing as myself. I figure, like you say, like if you know, if you treat the customer right and if you build that relationship, I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, very cool. All right. So it looks like you do a lot of the same things that I do in my business as far as, you know, repairs. You're kind of against the whole mobile thing. And now as far as mobile stuff, so you don't have to turn away business, have you been able to partner up with anybody in your area?
You know, I have, but I just basically give it away.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, but at least it's somebody I trust, right? So I'd rather send it to somebody I trust than somebody I don't trust, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Just, you know. Something I don't know at all, right? So
right, yeah. Goodwill goes a long way. I don't really mind passing things off to somebody, you know, that I know that, you know, will take care of the customer regardless. It's like I said, the whole competition thing to me is just like, yeah, you know, I'm not. It doesn't matter. Is a one person shop? You know, I'm only going to be able to handle so many people in a day, so many people in a week, so many people in a year. You know, unless I'm going to get to the point where I, you know, hire somebody else to do something. So. It doesn't really matter to me. You know, there's plenty of work to go around, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I just passed on 50 plus clients, like a one site with 50 different workers, basically to a competitor, a local competitor, just because I thought it was just too much for me and another person. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's good. A lot of people would try to hold on to that. And, you know, I think that they would think that, you know, I'm going to do the best job I can. But the reality is, if you really look at your schedule and what you're able to do and what you're not able to do, you got to assess those things and say, you know what, I'm not going to put myself out there like that, or, you know, overburden myself or not take care of the customer in the way that they need to be taken care of. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you get those emergency calls from your dedicated businesses, you know, like the people spend a lot of money with you. I have one of these mobile hotspots that, you know, you can connect 5 to 10 devices to.
Right.
And there was a big tire rubber remanufacturing place here in town, and their internet was completely down. So I got them up and running with that little device for a couple of days until they, you know, they got their network back up. There was like a wire that was cut. But those types of things, those customers never forget it. They really appreciate it. But I mean, if you're tied up with some other huge client that you really couldn't handle, they're going to take away from you being able to service the existing customers, I think, you know?
Yeah. And I've also heard other people could say, you know, when you've got those really huge clients and they're, you know, they become a good portion of your business, if all of a sudden that good, you know, that large portion goes away, then you're kind of stuck holding the bag and you go, okay, now where am I going to get my next customer from?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Whereas if you have a bunch of smaller customers, if one or two goes away, it's not going to really bother you one way or the other, because you'll be able to replace those fairly easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So what is there anything that you've been working on in your business lately as far as, you know, repairing, that's kind of a cool story or just, you know, like
sure,
a head scratcher?
Lots of those. Yeah. I had a Windows 3.1 PC in the other day.
No way.
Yeah, unbelievable. It was actually from a funeral home, and they use it like for a sign machine for coffins.
Oh,
and,
wow.
It's I couldn't believe it. The thing's over 20 years old, or around, probably around 20 years old.
Sure.
Yeah, and it still worked great. It was just the power button on it. Unbelievable.
Okay.
You know, it boots right up, you know, it worked fantastically. But yeah, isn't that something? And
now how'd you replace that power button?
Oh, just from another unit, basically. Okay. They were actually pretty easy, you know, if you get one that's sort of similar and you know, it's basically hot glued in there. I've done quite a few of them. They're usually pretty straightforward. I've never had one come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's good.
I mean, I don't like doing them, but when it's like a business or something, you just want to fix it properly. I mean, I could have put it in another case, but they liked everything just the way it was, right? So, and they built the cases nice and heavy duty back in the years, right? So,
sure. Yeah. You're not going to replace that with, they're kind of thin and I definitely understand that.
Yeah. Another thing I've done the other day actually was a company I do a lot of work for. They have a couple of businesses, and one of them's where they build cabinetry and stuff like that with these big CNC machines. And anyway, some of these machines, I guess, are $100,000 to $200,000 per machine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so they basically wanted the ability to put a big screen TV on the wall and see the image off the computer, right?
Okay.
So yeah. I called the manufacturer and they're like, no, it's not possible. You know, they were friendly. They got right through the tech. I was surprised, right? So, you know, I basically just took the side off the machine, and I've replaced screens and stuff in them before. And it's just basically a regular computer in there. And these ones are just running Windows 7 Professional. So basically I just plugged in a VGA splitter cable and a long VGA cable and hooked her up to the wall. And, you know, basically it saves maybe 30 seconds of travel instead of having to run, you know, every time they lift a sheet.
Okay.
Yeah, so it just saves time, you know, those types of things. So something else I've been supporting a bit lately was 3D printers. I have a couple of 3D printers here myself, and I've done a bit of consulting locally for that. I mean, I don't advertise for it, but, you know, just getting people set up, like businesses set up on smaller 3D printers and stuff, and showing them how to use it and all that stuff. It's pretty cool. Like I've printed a lot of my own stuff around the shop, like just a whole RAM and hard drives and even trays for, you know, trays for hard drives and you name it, just all kinds of things on 3D printers. They're amazing. I mean, they're just kind of, it's kind of a new thing. They're not perfect yet, but if you got a little bit of time to wait for a product, they're amazing.
Now, how did you learn how to, you know, basically program it so that, you know, it would make XYZ part?
Oh, it's simple. There's so many programs out there. There's a really good program that's called Blender that's harder to use, but there's a lot of really good, easy to use software out there. I'm trying to think of the name of a couple of them. There's a Google SketchUp, which you could use. There's trying to think of the name of this other one that's really easy to use. It'll come to me. Anyway, it's software is pretty easy to use. I mean, this is like anything else. You just educate yourself. You go online, you watch some YouTube videos or read up on the product, and they're actually pretty easy to use once you start fooling around with it.
Now, is it like a, you know, where you have to make a, you know, a digital drawing of what it is you want, or is there, you know, is it like, you know, using, I don't know, Photoshop or something like that, or?
Yeah, it's kind of more like Photoshop. Basically, you start with a shape, right? And you kind of drag the shape around to whichever way you want it. And, you know, if you're building something, like I put a part of my wife's Honda Odyssey, like a little part on the rear wiper that had fallen off. And instead of going to the dealer, I just printed off, I just took the caliper out and measured it and printed this little thing off in about 10 minutes. And it looks like it's stock. You know, it's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, you just drag shapes like squares or rectangles or whatever. And
okay.
You add on and you can put another shape on top of the other shape and turn it into a hole. So it erases part of the shape. I have my little guy, who's only 7 years old. He uses the software and he's a whiz at it. You know, it's anybody can do it.
Oh, no, that's cool. Yeah. I think my 10 and 8 year old would love to do something like that.
Oh yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. And the cool thing is if they play Minecraft, which I think everybody does.
Yep.
They can make these shapes in Minecraft, and there's another tool they can export from Minecraft and actually print it on a 3D printer. It's pretty cool.
Oh wow! I'm gonna have to get some more information on that.
Yeah.
What type of 3D printer did you end up getting?
I have Solid Doodles. I have two different second. I guess they're the second edition of Solid Doodles. I bought those because did a lot of research on them. They were maybe about a third the price of the MakerBot ones, but
okay.
Pretty much just as good quality, if not stronger quality. Like they're basically made of steel and heavy duty parts and stuff like that, right? So. Yeah, I guess it was a person that was high up in the company and got let go, and he started this company basically. He used to work for MakerBot.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. But I hear that they're going to be, you know, kind of big, like computers, when computers first come out, that eventually every home will have one of these things as well.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I definitely see that happening, especially as the price just keeps dropping and dropping on them.
Yeah. And, it's like, how many people went from, basically taking their roll of film and having it developed at a drugstore to, basically just printing off a picture, not even on photo paper necessarily, just on a regular sheet of paper and, hanging that on their fridge or putting that in a photo album or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and there's lots of websites out there, like probably the most popular one that anyone's in 3D printing would know about, called Thingiverse and Thingiverse.com. And there's probably tens of thousands of things there. You can literally just go there and click on it and download it and print it.
And not only that,
but you can actually modify it.
Okay.
And then, you all have something to start with, right? Or an idea at least, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite amazing.
Now, let me ask you an honest question though. How do you find time to mess around with that?
I don't really. It's hard. Yeah. I honestly haven't used it for a little while. I have a couple, like I say, and I really enjoy using them, but it's the time, like you say,
Yeah, because I mean, I was looking at your you run a unique, and I like this, but you run your business basically 12 hours a day, yep. As far as open time, so 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., which I think is cool. That pretty much anybody that has a computer problem within that, window, whether it's before work, after work, in the middle of work, at lunchtime, can basically get a hold of you and, have you go out there. Now, are you noticing, do you spend a lot of 12-hour days out and about?
Not so much. No.
Okay.
No, not normally. I have a contract person that can do work for me as well. Right now, sometimes I'll have more depending, how busy it is at that time. And I just recently partnered with the remote support tech team. So they're going to be helping me now, because there's a lot of time where you just can't keep up. You'll miss calls when you're with the customer.
Sure.
And you don't know for sure whether they call you back or not. Right.
Yeah, no, that's true.
But I mean, I made the long days initially just to, because I used to make really good money. So, I didn't want to wait 5 years before the business kind of really got up and started supporting itself, so just to get the customers initially and stuff. And now that I have the customers, I can hire help to do most of the work.
Yeah. And the other thing is too, you can also pick and choose, like you said before, you're not really doing mobile stuff. So you can pick and choose kind of the jobs that you're willing to do.
Yeah, there's no shortage of work. There really, literally, is no shortage of work at all. And for whatever reason, it seems like in town here, virtually nobody works on Macs. I don't know why. I encourage everybody out there that's listening, if you don't currently work on Macs, maybe buy one off of Craigslist or whatever, and just get a cheap one or something, anything, just so you can learn how to use it, because there's so much business in it. And I've got businesses with doctor's offices, you name it, just because I support Macs.
No kidding. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And nowadays, like in the last, say, year and a half, I probably get at least one Mac a week with a virus on it.
Okay.
And it's actually spreading to their iPad sometimes. I've had two customers now where through iCloud, the virus appears to spread to their iOS device, like to at least to iPads, if they're backing up through iCloud.
Now, what type of virus is that?
Well, you name it. There's all kinds. I sent you a link to, I'll send you a link at the end of the show again, but there's a good article from Apple. It's HTTPS and then support.apple.com.
Okay.
And then, I'll send you the proper link, but basically they have a really good link there on how to actually do the proper virus removal on Macs. And technically you don't even really need an antivirus to remove the viruses. Most of the viruses on Macs are all in common places. Kind of like you go through the registry on a PC, you can pretty much pick away at it. If you spend enough time there, something doesn't belong there. And it's kind of the same thing on a Mac.
Okay.
But they're just as easy to clean, if not easier to clean, I find, than a Windows computer.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just noticed the, I do have your notes and stuff that you did send over. So from before. So very cool. We'll definitely add those to the show notes. Now a lot of people say, well, those aren't viruses, those are malware, and they argue about those things. But it's like, you know, is it obtrusive? You know, is it messing with the way you're able to use your machine? And, you know, if then it's a whatever. It shouldn't be there, so we need to get rid of it.
Right. Yeah, I guess it was an article not that long ago where Microsoft recently acknowledged that, Ask software is some sort of malware. You know, that's been around for years, right? I mean, it doesn't really harm your PC, but it may kind of redirect, you know, where you're searching or whatever, right? So it's not something you want, right? It's unwanted software.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the same thing on Macs, you know. It's just that... You're getting more and more pop-ups on Macs nowadays, and a lot of people don't know how to get rid of them. And it's bizarre. Like, we have a local university here in town, and often I'll get stuff from university students. Like, they can't get rid of it, but I just don't think they spend enough time looking online, or maybe they just don't want to, right, to find out how to get rid of some of these pop-ups and things.
Yeah, that is amazing, because you would think that, I don't know. I mean, Macs are great for what they're used for. A lot of people use them for media creation and stuff, and that's fine. And I think you're right, though. I think a lot of people just don't want to learn how to do what we do. So we're willing to take the time and effort to, you know, to be able to fix their problems for them. And a lot of people are more than willing to pay for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I take my car to the shop, right? If I need brakes done, I take it to the shop, that type of thing. So, but I just find more and more the kids have grown up with the technology. So kids, you know, the younger people generally, you know, have a pretty good knowledge of the technology these days, I find.
Okay.
You know.
I still find they screw it up all the time, but.
Oh, it happens a lot. I get a lot of computers where it's really messed up because a friend of a friend tried to fix something or whatever. You know how it is, right? Or, you know, someone that has just a dangerous knowledge of how to fix something, and then they lose all their photos or whatever, right?
Hey, we can fix this. We'll just download Super PC Repair, and this will fix the machine.
Yeah,
I had to laugh. I, you know, every once in a while, I don't eat out a whole lot, but every once in a while, I'm sitting in Applebee's or something like that, and watching the TV. And I don't really watch regular TV, so I don't really see a lot of these commercials. But I see the commercial that comes up, then, and I can't even remember the name of the tool, but it's basically a USB key that's Windows PC Repair tool or something like that. And you basically plug it in, you push the button, and your PC is magically cleaned up. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
If only it were that simple.
I get customers sometimes, they'll call me about that. Like, a customer I've done work for in the past, they'll call me down the road and they'll say they saw ads like that. Will this really work? And I tell them, no, it's not going to work. You know, there is one stick, you probably heard of it, called Fix Me Stick.
Yes.
I actually use that. If I have the computer overnight, I'll actually, I pay for the, I think it's $300 and some a year for a couple of, you know, for one stick. And I have a couple of them just to, I figure what the heck, it just saves me time. It runs three different good antiviruses. And if it's just sitting here, you know, I can't ever think of maybe once or twice where I've ever had a computer come back in, you know, 30 days where, you know, there's been a virus on it again. There's been a couple of times, like I say, but I, you know, when you look at the history, you see where they went right away, right? They start downloading. Yeah. But I find it works pretty well. Like, it's pretty effective. It's a little pricey, but I figure it pays for itself pretty quickly.
Sure, yeah. If you can sit that over, you know, overnight, yeah. Sometimes I'll do a long scan on something, but I manually pretty much do my virus removals anymore, and I basically go through and look at where stuff is normally sitting. The only places they really can run from. I mean, the Windows operating system, like I've said in the past, really not changed since 98, maybe even 95. Yeah. You know, the back end is very, very similar, and things run pretty much the same way. I think the requirements nowadays have gotten a little looser with, you know, different drivers and stuff like that that, you know, basically can run not necessarily inside the system, but can almost run outside the system. And the reason I say that is because a lot of times, I don't know if people have noticed, but if you do a video card driver update, you basically don't have to restart your computer anymore.
Right.
And that means it's able to basically access all the files and stuff it needs. So that kind of opens up a whole nother can of worms that if somebody did have malicious code on that particular driver, or you downloaded it from a not reputable site or even a reputable site maybe, and somebody had gotten to it, then, you know, you could potentially... compromise your computer.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but other than that, really, but they still have to run from the same, you know, folder structure and system that they've run from for years, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, one thing I run into recently too, I don't know if anyone out there's had this problem yet or not, but you know, generally, yeah, maybe get one call a week or at least every couple of weeks where you get a new customer, all of a sudden where a bank notifies the customer that, you know, there was this, the credit card was used fraudulently, and because of the history of this company, they know it's related to your computer, that type of thing. But lately, I had one elderly customer, and he clicked on one of these ads that popped up, right? And he thought it was like a legitimate ad for McAfee, and it turned out not to be McAfee,
right.
Of course. He ended up paying him $600 and some. And the I don't even know what credit card company it is. I didn't ask. But the credit card company, he called them the same day. He called me right afterwards, and he something didn't feel right about it. And I said, that's a scam. I looked up the website and everything, and I said I would call the credit card company at least, you know, tell them what happened and probably get a different number, at least on the card or something. But before they're even going to look at refunding his money or putting a stop payment on it, they said it's a legitimate company, like it's a real company. And they said they need an authorized letter, like a real letter from an IT person saying, you know, what happened. And I've never ever had to do that before.
No, I've been having to do that a lot lately. I get those calls. Oh yeah, I get those calls where basically, and here's the funny thing is they go, the reason I'm called sometimes is they go, I need, you know, they might have a brother-in-law that was in IT for, you know, another company, but maybe doesn't do that, and you know, he's trying to help them out, but then they'll call me and say, well, I need something with letterhead, you know, basically it has your logo on it.
Yeah.
That looks legit. And I laugh because I go, you realize I just make these up in Word, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing legitimate or, you know, there's no watermarks or anything like that. It's like, but apparently, you know, I guess I'm putting myself on the line too, to a certain extent by saying, yes, here's what happened. This is not right. They shouldn't have done this. They didn't do anything to help with the computer. I'm coming in behind them and cleaning it up. And here's the things that I found. And usually then they'll reverse the charges.
Right. Right.
But the other thing I tell people too, is that if you're compromised like that, and you know, I've had them sometimes where you can call the company and they actually will reverse the charges because I don't think they want to get tagged negatively. So, sometimes that'll happen. If they don't, what I tell the customer is, I said, really? You need to go down and file a police report and, you know, file it on, you know, under fraud, and just so that the information is out there. And it's, you know, it's basically documenting that there was some sort of fraud done to you. So that way, if anything ever comes back, you know, at least they've got something to go off of. So,
right. Yeah. I've just never had to do that. Like customers before have always just, if they're the ones contacting the bank, you know, generally the bank had just been refunding it before for whatever reason, but it seems like an extra step now, you know?
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, so anyways, that's, it's always fun because I think these are the things where we support our customers and this is why they come to us, because of these types of things. Now, when I've had this happen before though, some of these are my regular customers and they go, well, I didn't know, you know, I thought I was talking to WinZip and, you know, it's like, no. I said, why wouldn't you just call me? I said, I would have saved you time and a whole lot of money. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunate. Sometimes it's hard to believe some of these people that get scammed. I'm really surprised to some of these people. And there's usually a lot of shame involved right from the spouse and that, all that kind of stuff. And I really feel bad for them. But some of these tech people are really... they must really be right on top of their game, and they really convince you that that there's something wrong with your computer when there's not, you know?
Well, I had one customer where they basically had, once they remoted into my customer's machine, they had pulled up his and his wife's social security number.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and it was probably just from a tax document that was sitting in the system. They did a little, you know, probably had a little script they ran that ran a search, and they got those numbers and they said, oh, see, here's your social security numbers. Because how many people don't keep their tax documents on their computer? Like everybody that uses TurboTax uses their, that's where their tax documents are. And you can bet that they don't put a password on them.
Oh, I see a lot of customers where, the, you know, right on the desktop is a folder called passwords or Wi-Fi or whatever, right? You know, And then some of these guys that remote into your computer, you know, sometimes they'll open up your router basically, right? As yes. well. So,
Yeah, anyway. You got to, you know, and that's the other thing too, is I, you know, that's one of the reasons I don't do remote support only, just because I want to be able to get to my customers if I need to. And this is just my, you know, for my business, this is what works for me. And the other thing is, you know, again, I'm creating that rapport where a lot of people, you know, they'll start off where, you know, I might remote in their machine and they don't have a problem or whatever. And I take care of the thing, but you know, at some point I'm going to see them or, you know, something like that. And at least they can see I'm a real person. But a lot of the remote support I do is, you know, after I've already gotten a customer. So right. I've already worked right. with the customer and, hey, I'm going to remote in, I'm going to take care of this issue. And we're, you know, we'll go from there. Seems to work a little bit better for me that way.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, before I forget, you guys were talking maybe a couple shows back about, you know, hard drive cloning devices and things like that. And someone was talking about a really expensive one. And then, you know, I have a number of the, you know, $50 or $75 sure. ones, but I also have one that I think it's the best thing I've ever bought, and I'll have to get you the model number, but it's Kangaroo, like Kangaroo. And it's a portable hard drive duplicator, and it goes for around, I think around $390 to, you know, $500, depending where you buy it from.
Okay.
But it's fantastic. And, you know, a lot of the time, if I'm doing a data recovery, right? So basically, I try some different tools to try to fix the structure in the drive, possibly. Nothing works, right? So usually what I like to do first is just do a clone of it, if, you know, before I do any work on the drive, if it's important. So if I clone the drive with this device, a lot of the time, once I clone it, I put the new hard drive in the computer, and it just starts right up and everything works. And, you know, you restart the computer so it installs the drivers for the hard sure. drive. But the computer, a lot of the time, it'll just work with the new hard drive and everything's just the way it was. Like no configuration required. The person has all of their programs, all of their settings. And it's amazing, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's a device that's and it's also one where you can go from larger to smaller drives and stuff. It doesn't always work, but there's a lot of settings basically where you can only copy certain things, and you know it's sure. it's a beautiful little drive for, like I say, around $400-$500, and it paid for itself so quickly, you know.
Absolutely. You know what I'm running into right now is I'm having a hard time because I'm getting a lot of ultrabooks and all-in-ones for some reason lately.
Oh, me too.
And they're not so easy to pull the drives out of. As a matter of fact, some of them, especially like the Acer brands, I really don't feel like pulling those apart because yeah. they don't come apart easily. And I'm surprised, you know, these all-in-one manufacturers, come on, people, you know, put a door on there so you can pull the hard drive out of it. I mean, obviously that's something that goes wrong in a computer. And it could happen within a year, you know, a year and a half, 2 years of somebody owning that computer. And there's absolutely no reason for them to, you know, necessarily go and replace it after that. They just need a new hard drive and an operating system reinstalled.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I'm even finding some of the laptops like Dell's and some different ones where you have to really take most of the computer apart, like the keyboard off and take a lot of stuff out just to get access to the hard drive. It's crazy. Oh, you know, like just on a regular laptop even. Exactly. But you're right, the ultrabooks are, yeah, yeah. And you're worried that something's going to break because really they're not intended to be coming apart and put back together.
Exactly. There's a lot of plastic to them and, yeah, just.
And they're beautiful, right? And people are buying them because they're beautiful and they're sure. portable and stuff. But then if you hand it back and it's not right, yeah. You know, one thing I'm finding too, which I'm assuming a lot of people out there are finding is the portables, the ultrabooks. If you have Windows 8 or 8.1 on it, and if you're authenticating your password in the cloud, if someone brings the computer to me, even if I hook it up to my network, I can hook it up to my network actually. If there's no network jack on it, which a lot of these don't have anymore,
right?
I can't log into the computer. You know what right. I mean? Because I can't get around the password. It'll say use the last password used, and when you type it in, I just can't get in. There's been quite a few times that's happened. I don't know. Have you experienced that yet?
Yes, I experience that all the time, unfortunately, and it's
unfortunate. Yeah,
it is something. I do believe there still is a main a hidden administrator login that you can, you know, get in a command line and open up. Even on the Windows 8 machines.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's it. What, yeah, I'm pretty sure I've done that a few times where I've had to get, you know, get in, that way. And there's sometimes, you know, if that's not going to work or whatever, a lot of times I have to call my customer. And what happens is the customers that change the password to a PIN code,
yep,
because it's easier to put in a 4-digit PIN code. The problem is that's great, but they don't remember their password.
Right. All the time.
And yeah. So you're like going, well, I say you're basically, because this is your email account or whatever, you know, I can try to do it for you, but probably the best thing for you to do is to reset your password and then give it to me.
Yeah. I run into that a lot where, you know, I'm sure everybody does, where people have no idea what their passwords are. So you go over for a simple job. Next thing you're setting up the router again. You're setting them up for new email accounts because they can't remember what their passwords are. And some of those jobs you have to charge by the hour. It's just, it's a lot of work.
I have a system sitting on my bench right now. It's just finishing some updates, but I couldn't get it. It wouldn't boot. And, I was able to get into safe mode, but I couldn't get it to, you know, boot in regular mode. And I was trying to figure out what was blocking it. And I come to find out, I think it was AVG. I had to write a registry key in safe mode in order to get the uninstaller to work and then uninstall AVG from safe mode. And then lo and behold, it booted back into the system. So,
yeah.
You know, that was able to work. But yeah, it's little things like that that kind of throw you off.
I see a lot of problems. I'm sure everyone does with the various antiviruses. Like, and again, there's another person, not the same person I was talking about before, that does kitchens and stuff. But another person, I got a call out there because he had to get a quote out. And this guy's charging like $20,000 to $100,000 for just a small little, like a bar in your basement or something. It's like high end. And he couldn't get this quote out, and he was already missed the first appointment. He was trying to get this quote ready. And it turned out it was just the antivirus was, basically thinking his software that he was using, which is specialized software, was a malware or a virus, right? You know, it happens a lot.
Exactly. And that's, a lot of times that's why I tell people, and people will argue with me till the day they die probably. But if you're going to use a free antivirus, just use Microsoft Security Essentials. I don't care what anybody says. To be honest with you, it doesn't. I've seen it. I've had it on my bench machine for years. I don't now, but I've had it on there for years, and it would catch all kinds of things every time I would plug another drive in from a infected computer. But the thing is, when it's running, it runs so low in the background that you don't even really notice that it's running, and it just does its job to a certain extent. And again, there's not been a system that has had any antivirus on it, paid for or unpaid for, that I have not seen in my shop that's not been infected. Not
same
one.
Here. Oh, I get all of them. Yeah.
So, to me, it's like, the antivirus or, even sometimes the internet security suites can be a little overwhelming. I've ran into problems like I did back in the late 90s, early 2000s with third-party firewalls. And it's like, guys, Windows Firewall does just fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, I used to run it on all my stuff before I, I'm partnered now with F-Secure Antivirus. It's really good. And I find the first time things go out to the internet, it'll ask you, is it okay? But, and it seems to be pretty light. I haven't had any problems with it yet. But Microsoft Security Essentials, yeah. I mean, it's like you say, it's lightweight. It runs in the background. It's designed for your PC. And legally, I think you're allowed to use it on up to 10 computers in your business, right? So why not use it? As long as you have a legitimate copy of Windows, you may as well. It's just especially for the average user. I mean, if you're going and doing things you shouldn't be doing, then you might get yourself into trouble, right?
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm always looking for a solution that's going to better protect my customers. So, you have the one side of the tracks where you say, okay, we're going to do a managed service, and it's going to have a built-in, firewall. It's going to have a built-in, antivirus. It's going to have a built-in. It's going to check for Windows updates, and it's basically going to do a check on your computer daily, and it's going to take care of you, and you don't have to really touch anything. So that's the one end. And then you've got the other end where you've got basically you set up maybe an antivirus. You might sell a license for malware bytes or something like that, and that works okay. But I see people with malware bytes and stuff on their computer, and they're still infected. So it's like either my portion of the country is just so out of whack from everybody else that it just doesn't make any sense, or that's just the norm.
Yeah.
But that's just what I see. So it's kind of one of those things where I would like to sell, if somebody just wants an antivirus, you know, internet security suite that's going to have a firewall and all that kind of stuff, you can use those in residential, I think. But I'm hearing, like you just said, you use F-Secure, and our friend John Dubinsky also has been using F-Secure, and he loves it. And he does a lot of businesses. I think that's most of his business is businesses. And he said it just works, and it does what
I think you said you use Bitdefender, right? They're good too, obviously.
They are. I've just had a problem with their firewall.
Yeah.
So once I was able to go around and reconfigure that after talking to them, it's been work. It's on my bench machine right now, and it works fine. The only thing is, and here's why I always had a problem with some of these on my bench machine, is because it likes to eat my tools.
Yeah.
So I have to remember to shut it down before I launch a tool, because it just eats it. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my EXE is gone.
Yeah.
Darn.
Not to mention, it's embarrassing if you go to someone's business or whatever, and you plug in your USB stick, and it pops that you have a virus on your stick, you know, and they're thinking, who is this guy?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, fortunately, you were talking about the Kangaroo, duplicator, which I'm definitely going to check into. Those are the lockable USB sticks that I use.
I have a couple of those myself as well. Yeah. Yeah.
And they work great because I'm able to, once I lock it, I don't care what machine I plug it into. At least it's not going to eat my tool.
Right. You know what else you can use for people that don't really want to spend any money on them? Because they are a little pricey,
right? Yes.
But you know what else you can use is one of those SD card readers,
with really the switch. Yep.
Yeah. And put an SD card in it and it has a switch on it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
For, people starting out don't want to spend a lot of cash. But one tool I've had to use a lot lately, I found, was... seems like some certain viruses are really messing up Windows services before I get the computer.
Yes.
So have you ever used the ESET repair tool? Like, I find it's really good. It's just automatic. You just install it, right click, put it on a desktop like you would CombiFix. But in this case, it's just going to replace Windows services. You right click on it and boom.
Okay.
It works really well. Yeah.
I actually, for a lot of those types of things, I actually use D7.2.
I have that too, yeah.
So I usually run through the gambit of, if there's Windows problems, like, the services, restore, all that kind of stuff. I kind of run through I've got mine set up to where I just basically click a button and it goes in and repairs everything, whether it needs it or not. And basically, a lot of that stuff is just doing a reset on the service, fixing it from that standpoint. But I'll definitely check out the ESET. You said it's called ESET Repair Tool?
Yeah, it's in the link I sent you. It's an ESET Repair Tool. Yeah,
great.
I find it works really well. But obviously D7 does too. I use the D7 when with Instant House Call. Like I use Instant House Call for remote support.
And, gotcha, okay.
But if I have something locally, sometimes I'll just, this is quick, right? And I don't, it's just really easy, really quick and easy to use.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you know you're only having that specific problem,
right,
that's going to save you a ton of time versus running through a whole gambit of programs. That's good tip.
Yeah. Another tool I came across, I believe I sent you a link to, Clone App. I don't know if you've heard of that one yet.
No, I was just checking out your document that you sent me. So what is that?
It's pretty cool. Don't get me wrong, I use Fabs Auto Backup and I love it, right? But this Clone App, it just backs up your settings for Windows programs. So I think it'll copy over about 119 known Windows programs, just the settings. So it's really quick.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. Basically, it's just simple to use. It's portable. I think it's a relatively new tool in the last couple of months, if I'm not mistaken. And you basically just extract the program to the desktop, like to a folder on the desktop, so it runs quickly. And you just right-click on it to launch it as administrator. And over on the left, it looks a lot like CCleaner, but you just check off whichever services you want to back up, basically, before you work on someone's computer or before you maybe reinstall Windows. And, say you want to do a complete reinstall of Windows and, you just basically want to, put all the settings back. This will do it for you. And it's nice and quick.
No, that's
and
very
totally
cool.
Free.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's called, it's at the website, mirinsoft.com. mirinsoft.com.
Okay.
But it's called Clone App.
Very cool.
Pretty cool.
Very cool. No, we'll definitely add that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Another program, which I don't know if I've heard on your show before, but it's just like a calendar sharing program. Have you heard of Team Up?
No, I have not heard of that one.
Oh, it's amazing. It's TEAMUP.com.
Okay.
And totally for free, you can have up to 10 sub-calendars. And it's a lot like Google Calendar, but you just left-click on whatever day you want to add something. And you can share it, of course, with anybody, right? And you just put a link on like a mobile phone or whatever to it, and whatever device you have, as long as you have internet, it's instant. Apparently on their website, like NASA uses it, Michelin, Harvard University.
Nice.
Yeah, they have a couple. They have a couple of packages where if you want password protection, they charge you, I think it's $8 a month, and then $20 a month if you want to file upload capabilities and stuff with up to 50 sub calendars and stuff. But I've just started using it for it's free for up to 10, you know, up to 10 sub calendars. You can share it with a ton of people. So I find it works really well.
Oh, that's very cool. No, I'll definitely check into that.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Is there, man, we've talked about a ton of software and different hardware and stuff that you use, obviously, in your business. Do you have any special screwdrivers or things that you use for, you know, taking stuff apart, or just the generic sets like everybody else?
No, I bought quite a bit of stuff. I do have one iFixit set, which I like, and I've bought a lot of stuff just from hardware stores and stuff. I have my, you know, the funny thing is some of my favorite little screwdrivers are just cheap screwdrivers, but they work so well on the back of MacBook Pros and stuff. And I use the same screwdriver over and over again, you know, it's funny. But no, I didn't spend a ton of money on tools. You know, like I have, you know, I bought the, I haven't bought Fluke stuff or anything. This is so expensive, but I bought a lot of network type tools for crimping wires and testing wires. Sure. And all that kind of stuff, and some stuff for pulling wires through walls and all those, that kind of stuff. Cause we do some home theater work as well. We're not real big into it, but we set up a pretty cool home theater system for someone not long ago. And they have a total, like a room probably is almost as big as some people's homes. And it was just total home theater. It's amazing.
Oh, nice. You
know? Oh yeah. I asked if I could take some photos of it while I was setting it up, and they're like, oh yeah, no problem. But amazing. Just rows and rows. You know, it was like almost like a real movie theater, you know?
Oh, that's amazing. Really cool.
Oh yeah. It's absolutely cool. But something else that I don't know if I really mentioned, but I really encourage people to get into the Mac stuff. And I'm not a Mac fanboy. I mean, I have more Windows computers than I have Mac computers, and there's obviously still more work in the Windows side than there is on Macs, but I do a lot of setting up wireless networks where, you know, you go in and throw in an AirPort Extreme, which is so quick to set up, like literally a minute or two.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe one or two AirPort Expresses. And really it's just seconds to set it up. And people are so happy with that. I get a lot of people where they you know, where they have maybe a garage that's separate from the house, or their business is close to their house, but not real close. But there's enough room there that, you know, you can make it work from an AirPort Extreme to an AirPort Express, and they had never been able to get it work before, or they had run lines and the animals had chewed up the network cables, et cetera. You know, there was one person that has a pottery business, and I think it was virtually every year the squirrels or something got, and they chewed up the network cables, or rats or something. I don't know. But yeah, he was paying a fortune, I guess, to get this done. And he says, is there any way, you know, he called me, I hadn't done it before. And I said, well, we could try this. And, you know, it's been working well for him. He hasn't any problems.
Yeah, my understanding is like the AirPort Extremes and stuff like that is that they're great routers to use, period, even if you have Windows machines.
They hook up
and they're fairly easy to set up, and you can just, you know, basically plug and play and, you know, get it set up real quickly. And my understanding is they work real good. I've never personally worked with them, but the people that I do know that have, they say, oh yeah, these are so easy. So
yeah, and they're secure. Like, I mean, I get a lot of even businesses where they're, you know, they have where they push the button on the router and they go and push the button on the device. And a lot of people are scary. Even dental offices, doctor's offices, they're still using this. And a lot of people think it's fine, even though you tell them someone could probably hack into that in about a minute, you know.
Shut that button
it's a
off.
Shame. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
what do they call that? Funny, the WPS? Like,
yeah, some of the local ISPs, if you still had some of that stuff turned on, or if some of your settings weren't secure enough, I was actually getting calls where, you know, I had to go out and beef up their security, or the internet service provider was going to shut them down. But I guess it just depends who you're with. Some don't care about those types of things.
Wow.
But the Apple stuff that, you know, that doesn't have that, it's just built, it's just secure, right? You know?
Right, right.
And it's just simple, easy to set up. And you know, they're a little bit more expensive, but, you know, it works really well. And like you say, with Windows computers too, right? There's no, it just works fine.
They're, well, see, that's, that, it depends. They're not any more expensive than what I pay for regular routers myself. So, I've always been a gamer, and so, you know, and I've had, you know, having five kids, you know, everybody's got their own computer. And so, you know, with, you know, seven people in the household, I want to make sure I got enough, you know, throughput in a good wireless router that, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're on your, you know, tablet, phone, computer, whatever, you can just do what you need to do and you really don't have problems. And to be honest with you, here's the thing. I don't know that I've ever gotten a router to last. I don't care how much you pay for it. I've never gotten a router to last more than 5 years.
Really?
Never. Yeah. I just, for some reason, and what'll end up happening is I'll see it's flaking out a little bit and I might have to, you know, restart it once a month and I'll deal with that for like a year. And then all of a sudden I just get to the point where I go, forget it. I'm just going to go buy it.
They do wear out. Yeah. You know, mine's probably 5 years old. It's an old, time capsule, an Apple time capsule, my main one. And I have a couple of Airport Expresses as well, just to have strong signal everywhere.
Sure.
But I do use the power line networking as well because we have an Xbox and Xbox One, and I have a few kids, and they're always playing that stuff too, right?
Sure.
So I understand what you're saying about the throughput. But I don't know. They're built well. They're built pretty well. Like they seem to last, like literally, like the time capsule I'm talking about, it's been about 4 years sitting on top of my pipes on top of the furnace, like getting hot in the summer, you know, or in the winter when the heat's blowing through them, and it's still kicking.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Well, do you have any business tips or anything that you would tell people other than, you know, obviously working on Macs, and to be, just to preface that, I don't think there's that much difference other than the operating system, and it's just something you have to dink around with a little bit.
Oh, you can learn it in no time. Yeah, there's really not much to it.
It's a PC,
just like,
right?
If you get a cheap one, I know they're a little pricey to buy, but like if you buy a really good Windows computer, you're going to probably pay just as much anyway. Just like you say with a router, you can buy a good router, and it's going to cost just as much as an Airport Extreme, if not more.
Sure.
Right? You know, like as far as business tips and stuff like that, you know, just try to network, I guess. Like I get a lot of business from small businesses, you know, so like I have a lot of accountants for and bookkeepers for clients. And if you treat them right, get a lot of referrals from those guys because they're working with other businesses, right? So
sure.
Then, you know, they pass your card out and it just get involved, I guess. Like I said, I literally have not went to one business ever and asked for, you know, to help service their, you know, their shop or whatever. But yeah, just treat people right. Just, you know, do the job. And if something goes wrong, you know, look after it.
Sure. Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that's a great parting tip there. All right. Well, if people wanted to find you, what's the best way to do that, Don?
Just go to www.mytechgeeks.ca or .com. It'll forward to .ca.
Excellent. And I just want to thank you for coming out today and sharing with us.
That's great. Thanks. Pleasure being here.
No problem. All right. You can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show like Don, just email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you guys want to leave a voicemail, you can call 1-888-697-0162 and we'll get that answered for you. I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could do us a great, big, huge favor, especially for some of you that are on iPhones, which I know a lot of you are, if you could leave us a rating and review over on iTunes, that would be great, and it would let more people know about the show and be able to get this great information we're putting out. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. And we'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.